Okay, good afternoon. Thank you to organizers for asking me to talk at the conference, which is really far from the normal cell of physics. And I should say, I also very enjoy my time at KTB. Which is a wonderful place. I had my program for 3 months, 2 years ago, and it was probably one of the most wonderful time in my life. Okay, so. Okay, now, going on to common envelope physics. So what is common envelope? Common envelope is a nickname for unstable mass transfer in a binary system. It's a rapid phase, then one star enters in the envelope of another star, and kind of cartoonish type makes what we call the spiral in. The orbital energy is getting deposited, and the envelope departures. That's a cartoon type, right? Now, it was not invented for massive stars. 40 years ago, it was invented for stars which are called white dwarfs, which are tiny. Now, for white dwarfs, we know stellar evolution relatively well. We know that they are getting large as they evolve. They're usually getting like 200 solar radius or larger. And if you find two white dwarfs which are relatively close to each other, like a half a solar radius, you can imagine that something happened to them. So those were the reasons for the common envelope to be invented. Now you ask yourself, well, I'm here at the conference for very, very massive stars. I'm doing black holes. They're very cool. I'm doing double neutron stars. Why I should learn and be... why should I care about the boring white dwarfs? Well, the problem is that the same physics, the same event, is responsible for the formation, at least some of the double black holes or double neutron stars which you observe. And unfortunately, it's not only can be responsible for their formation, and unfortunately, it's because it's a very uncertain event in general, but it also can kill, so it can form and it can kill. Now, here is just an example for one of the complicated scenarios, as binary population synthesis say, people say, is then you consider a binary system that you evolve it from one point to another point, and you just consider the most important points in that evolution. So you can have a mass transfer, and you can have a supernova, so every of those points have to be considered, treating some recipes, and preferably quickly, like crunching, right? So, and one of those events is a common envelope evolution. Now, they need fast recipe. For fast recipes, what was invented is that you can consider a binary system before a common envelope event and after a common envelope event. And you say, okay, there's a mess in the between. Let's do the shortcut between the two states. And you can do the shortcut if you believe in the energy conservation law. We are physicists, we generally believe in the energy conservation law. And so what is considered is you take the difference in the orbital energy, so the energy which you had before, the orbital energy that it had after the common envelope, and you compare it to the energy which is needed to be spent in order to remove that envelope from the binary. That is usually called as a binding energy. It's a little bit tricky because the total energy is negative, binding energy is positive. But anyways, you compare those two energies. Then you multiply the available energy, which is orbital energy, by so-called parameter alpha, because we like the letters. And this was the first one to come into the head. And so the alpha implies is the efficiency of the use of orbital energy when it's transferred into the binding energy of an envelope. Now you do another parameterization, then you try to connect quickly the true binding energy of an envelope with some parameterized, and you do it through the lambda parameter. So that created alpha lambda energy formalism. Binary population synthesis people love it. It's fast, right? It's just one equation. It's numerically super rigid. It's really hard to code it in a way that it will break your calculations. So, what I'm saying is straightforward, right? We don't need to use Einstein equations. Everything is easy, right? I mean, I just saw that you go from here to here. Why the common envelope is not solved yet? Now, the problem is, is that all that mass is extreme simplification of a true physical situation which does not consist of one simple shortcut from the stage A to the stage B. Now, so here we come to a little bit more complicated picture where I try to fit in the physics which is involved. I will try to stay on this figure for a little while. Now, so what to say, to tell you, we distinguish six different stages of a common envelope evolution. And of the six stages, only one of them is the one which is a quick spiral in, and the one which is maybe plausible to treat with the alpha lambda formalism, which binary population people love. Now, all those stages operate on a different time scale. All those stages involve different physics, and all those stages work work with a different dimensional resolutions. So it's the different cots, different times, different resolutions. So let's say with the first one is the initial mass transfer. So the point is that usually what is considered for the common envelope evolution to start is that you take the star at the Rochlov overflow and you say, okay, my mass loss will be unstable. What we figured out in the recent years that it will be unstable, but not right away. It will be unstable eventually. As it's going to be unstable, it can remove a significant fraction envelope from 10 to 50% of it. And that removal is not going to use the orbital energy, right? It's using the potential energy of your accretor. So the energy formalism is not applicable. Then you have the moment then the mass loss starts to go on through the L2 point. The evolution speeds up, and this is when the significant amount of angular momentum from the binary is going to get lost. Only after that, this is somewhere when we have this quick plunging, then the star plunges into the envelope. Now, unfortunately, no numerical simulations so far showed that the end of a dynamical plunging will lead to the complete common envelope ejection. And the reason for that is that as it plunges in and deposits the orbital energy, the envelope puffs up. It becomes a little bit too far from the now compact binary, and it's really hard to extract orbital energy at that moment to put it back again to the envelope. So it's like a stalled envelope above the compact binary. Now, the one other way to end the envelope is so-called rainbow combination outflows, and it is if the envelope has expanded in far enough to start recombination. I will come back to that later. But it's not necessarily the ending. So the envelope is really puffed up, it's not very dense enough, and the star can keep on going inside for a while. And this is what we call as a self-regulated spiral in. The problem with that stage is that we don't know how long it may last. The star loses the energy at the same rate as the orbital energy is extracted, and the final orbital separation doesn't have to depend on the orbital energy release because you're losing so much of the energy here. At the end, at some point, this envelope may become unstable, starts to have very big pulsations, and can be driven away. Okay, so that's a big picture. Now, from that picture, you may have understood now, this is the initial energy conservation as the alpha energy, alpha lambda energy formalism considered, is orbital energy and the total energy of envelope. Now, generic form, we can write the energy equations in a generic form considering all the thermal energies, potentials, energy, kinetic energy at the start, at the end. The trouble also, of course, is that we have extra energy, which can be added up through whatever mechanism you wish if you want to tweak your common envelope evolution, if you really need it. And that tweaking can be done through the accretion on the star, which spirals in through the common envelope, through the jets, which deposit kinetic energy to that envelope, through the magnetic field, because everybody loves magnetic field, and through some additional explosive nuclear burning. We also have a sink, which is hard to evaluate at the beginning, because that sink is the luminosity of the star during when it's puffed up, during the common envelope, multiplied by the time when it's puffed up. You cannot evaluate it right away at the beginning. So now those terms are very big. In addition, also, this thermal energy may contain the term which is called as a reservoir of recombination energy, which may or may not be used, but it's comparable to the thermal energy of an envelope. And at the end, the ejector at the infinity has as much of a kinetic energy as it also can be comparable to the final orbital energy of the formed binary. And there is a lot of other terms which are usually neglected. So treating it with a simple formalism, even energy conservation, is not very doable, right? So, but if it's so complicated, let's just go back and maybe use simple energy formalism anyway, because everything is hopeless. Well, I will show some progress, and during that progress, I will use some vocabulary. I will say that we're doing well if there are some self-consistent simulations have been done, at least for some stages. People can understand what's going on in terms of physics, and they can bubble at least for half an hour explaining that physics self-consistently. And I will say that it's a work in progress. If there is simulations are only advertised for a while, they have not been done yet. The complete set of physics is not included, but at least we have some estimates and some hopes. Okay, I will not tell about any fails during this talk. Okay, so doing well, as predicted by simple energy formalism, we can obtain the different evolutions after the Planck in terms that we can have a common envelope ejection. If a companion was massive enough, we can have a slow spiral in the ejection at some point at the end. If the mass of a companion is smaller, and we can have a merger. So we have a full set of families. We're also doing well in understanding the angular momentum evolution, at least before the common envelope event. So here, I'm showing mesmerizing simulations from Morgan McLeod, who considered how much angular momentum and matter can be lost for L2 point. Now, the interesting thing is that this amount of momentum is very different from what you will consider to be consistent if the matter will be synchronized with L2 point. And that makes the prediction of after L2 outflows very complicated. It's also a very big amount of angular momentum is lost, and what we know is that during the spiral in and after that, if you have a self-regulated spiral in, the envelope is not rotating really fast. Now, what is also doing well, at least for some cases with low mass giants, we can model a complete common envelope ejection. So that for that relatively restricted set of radio of donors and the masses, we can create some kind of fitted energy formalism, which will be working for that set of stars, but it cannot be really extrapolated much further. Now, work in progress is to do common envelope in massive stars. Paul Ricker Groups is working on it. See also the poster here by his student, Miguel Holgado. Also, what doing well? We can understand that common envelope ejection is not one ejection. It's a sequence of several ejections. So one of them is when you do through, you're going through that L2 mass loss. It takes a lot of angular momentum away. Then it's a kinetic ejection during the Planck. Then it's so-called recombination outflows. And so assume that you have some envelope ejected, some is still bound. What the bound means? It doesn't stay in a single place. It has a ballistic trajectory. The ballistic trajectory means that it will expand for a while, but then it will collapse backwards. As it collapses backwards, it reionizes helium, and that ionization of helium triggers another ejection, which we call the Schultz-Rigaud ejection here. It's by the amount of mass ejected during the unit of time is comparable to dynamical ejection, and it again goes to recombination outflows. So there are several ejections, and they will be imprinted later on in whatever we see as a post-common envelope nebula. Now, how recombination outflows works? Well, imagine that you puffed out the envelope, and it doesn't have more kinetic energy from you, but it's located now in the place where if it recombines and releases that energy and can use that energy, so it's a lot of if, but if it can use that energy, and that energy is larger than its local potential energy, then it will fly away. So the radius for which it works, we call recombination radius. So if recombination starts above that place, the envelope will outflow. If it will start below that place, it will not outflow. Easy. Now, what else is doing well? If to understand at least some physics during a slow spiral in, what is clear, if you try to heat up the envelope during a self-regulated spiral in, the star is moving gradually from gamma 5/3 to gamma 4/3. It's becoming very unstable. It develops some big pulsations as shown here on this figure. This is a kind of Hertzsprung-Russell diagram for how common envelope behaves during the self-regulated spiral in. During those big pulsations, it ejects the envelope during the each pulsation at the, about this point. Now, so since we have several ejector episodes, each of those ejector episodes will be imprinted in the planetary nebula, which we can observe later. Now, that is still work in progress because we have only a several full complete envelope ejections. And like for complete common envelope ejections, most of them, I shall say, look very round. They can be compared to some observed planetary nebulas, which are also very round, but not all of them are very round. Now, and that is comes where the devil is in detail, because when you try to look in detail on some simulations, you could have a deviations like this, like a jet. Morgan McLeod had a bipolar outflows. Now, the thing is that, unfortunately, none of those simulations is fully self-consistent in terms of formation of planetary nebula because it takes many years plus radiation to shape it eventually. And we don't have yet because we mainly work in a dynamical timescale. Now, the last thing which I want to say is that we have some grip now on observing common envelope events. And that started with the V1309 score outburst, which was only later categorized as a very interesting event. So here is a light curve of a V1309 score, and this observation's been actually done by the Amateur Society of Variable Stars of America, for which I'm very grateful to them. Later on, people dig up in the data, in the ugly data before the outburst, and what they have found is that this object was a binary with a constantly depleting orbital period through the time. So here is the orbital period as it depleted before it went to the outburst. So for the first time, we have actually observed a binary merger. Now, we need to try to make some simulations which will confirm and explain how that merger will be comparable to the observations. Now, so here I come to the model, which is kind of stolen from supernova type P community. And this has also been stolen from the theory of expanded fireball, which was initially created by nuclear physicists to explain some explosions which they have performed in nearby locations. Now, so here, from one side, you have a very hot ionized plasma going outside. Now, here is the observer. What it sees is some cold, neutral, low opacity stuff. Here is a fast radiative cooling. Here is a no radiative cooling. There's a lots of mess in the between. Again, I mean, we don't like mess. It's very complicated. But we understand that this is a direction of the mass ejection, and this is a direction of that cooling wave propagation. So for the observer who stays there, what is happening is that this radius stays roughly constant. And if I take again that figure, which shows where recombination takes place in the common envelope event and rotate it, then you'll see that with time, the location is about at the same place. The optical depth is very high even here. So in principle, we do not see into recombination, and we don't see into the bound mass. We mainly see the ejector. Now, several groups try to model the light curves of various common envelope events or mergers. Everyone has its own simplification or semi-analytical models. Here is the group by Brian Metzger. Here is by Morgan. Now, we also work on trying to model the light curve of the merger. So here are results from the SPH simulations. They are not completed yet. We're only like 20 days into the merger, and it takes lots of time. But this is a light curve which we can produce. So that's the last point. Now, I only want to make a conclusion so that whatever you hear the alpha-lambda formulas, you need to understand that alpha formulas doesn't work. Alpha, there is no alpha that can serve them all, and it's overall understanding in the community who model common envelopes. So, unfortunately, there is no easy solution for binary population synthesis. Now, as a good thing, a common and tri-common envelope projection can be modeled, but only for low-mass stars. The high-mass stars are coming out. I very much hope that it will be published at least maximum next year. Substantial mass can be lost even before the common envelope merger event has started. L2 and 3 and pre-common envelope mass losses are very important for common envelope outcomes, and they're really hard to be parameterized by the binary population synthesis. We know that CE outflows will shape up planetary nebulae. There will be some constraints from observations placed back on the common envelope physics as soon as we will be able to model the evolution of our remnants further away in time. And modeling light curves and common envelope events and mergers by different groups and methods and comparison them to the red transient may provide additional constraints on the common envelope physics. Thanks.
Thank you, Natasha. Questions? Chris.
So the shape of the outflow long term is, you know, important not just in, you know, comparing to planetary nebula, but a lot of supernova, the circumstellar media, that's, you know, and the structure of it could play a big role. Things like CASA, 87A.
Yep.
What is the time frame that we'll get, you know, exactly what this ejecta profile looks like? Is there a way to, because it seems like there's physics that you need to do more to get that.
So I think the main physics, at least for planetary nebulas after the low mass common envelope events, is this radiation which the remnant produces. So I do not have that physics. I know some groups who try to work on it. They don't have common envelope events. So I mean, there is some loss in the communication so far. But the physics is a long-term evolution with inclusion of radiative field. That's what we don't have. Yeah. Yes, and white dwarf wind, like fast wind, yes.
Stuart.
So I guess, you know, the population synthesis group, if you don't allow them alpha formalism, they would like something else more complicated.
I know.
And one traditional way of trying to nail these down has been looking at binary white dwarfs and open clusters, like I think Baczynski's original V471 tau, which I think is making the Pleiades, is still the best case. But with Gaia, are there prospects for getting dozens of things V471 tau, where one could at least test the various models between initial states and
yes, there is expectations, but also I shall say that there are already quite a few papers which are made for the white dwarfs using SDSS. For post-common envelope binaries, and those are exactly when the observer community say that there is no one alpha which can rule them all. I mean, they completely harden it because they can show that this alpha just it varies by a factor of 10 between two types of the binaries for even post even for white dwarf binaries.
Yeah, I understand that, but I guess the question is, these more detailed models, are they predictive?
Yes, so what can be done, but it's already will not include any alpha lambda. You just will do the direct mapping, right? You'll say, okay, if my post-common envelope remnant masses are such and such, and for white dwarfs it's directly linked to the pre-common envelope separation, then this is what should be my pre-common envelope binary. So it will be just reverse mapping from observation, but it will have to forget about alpha. On the other hand, we know that alpha, both from simulations, from observations, so much different depending on where you start your evolution. So, I mean, one can do the alpha, but it will be like a complicated table of alpha with lots of little ranges for masses and orbital separations. I don't know whether it will be any easier.
For that?
I think my question was not, you know, alpha, I agree, alpha is dead, but I guess the question is, can one actually make useful predictions from recombination models or self-regulated in spiral, which actually predict what we see in the clusters? Or is it still too complicated?
I would say 2 years would be my answer.
For the double white dwarfs, where the masses are very well known, and it is important to know the masses to the, like, to the hundreds, there are simulations with complete common envelope projections which can say what was their progenitor. Now, again, you can find several possible progenitors of those systems, but you can say that you can model, you can create that system using the existing hydrodynamical cords if you start with that and that progenitor.
I think, to comment, I mean, I think there is being progress made at the moment, but I think one can't put it all together yet, right? So, but I think Natasha and his work and others really helped to understand the different phases. And now, and it's that they exist, and then I think you will have some predictive power.
But For prediction of a slow spiraling, it's very complicated. I mean, for getting constraints from observations. One can imagine that this star, having a lot of mass outflows, will be heavily obscured by dust. We try to find those long-term variables in the Gaia data. So far, we didn't manage. And maybe it's because we obscured.
Yes. Do you ever consider any accretion during common envelope? And if so,
I personally don't, but I know lots of papers which do. I mean, people do work on it, of course, right? I mean, this is one of the things. If you have a neutron star going inside, you will try to find what will be the effective accretion rate. For example, there is a series of very nice papers, again, by Morgan McLeod, who considered exactly like the accretion in the box on a neutron star, which will be going in the medium, which has some density gradient. What was found that the accretion rate is much below the Eddington, much below the Hondi-Boyle accretion rate. So, I mean, they are works. Now, the question is when it become important, because the plunge in itself is very short. It's only comparable to the orbital period. So if it will become important, it will become important for stars which are very extended in the beginning, so the period is very large. So the spiraling itself also will last kind of years.
But would an outflows created jets would be very important for the spectra that you would get from this?
For what?
Would this influence the spectra at all?
For spectra?
Yeah, if you were trying to model what it would look like.
Well, for what we model now for light curves, we do not include any extra physics like accretion of jets. Now, the jets are also highly speculative because it's not clear how exactly they are created. So whenever people try to put the jets in, they put in a very speculative model, and you need to have at least some wide angle, and at least it has to be directed this way or some. I mean, there is a lot of fitting mechanism which will allow for the jet to produce something useful. Okay, so to include itself consistently at this moment is impossible.
Okay, Lars? Is there a simple test case that at least those that can do the calculations could agree to do? So let me give you the simple proposal in my head.
Been started.
Okay, let me give you one that would be nice. Let me give you what I think is simple, which is a one solar mass star and a 0.2 solar mass star, one solar mass, at orbital period initially of 50 days.
Look,
yes,
this
good.
This comparison run has started.
Okay. But what are you doing?
It's the same. Yes, it's the same kind of a star, the same kind of a companion, the same radio. People with several different cords are trying to compare. The only trick is that all of them try to dump down their cords so we could be a little bit more compared, because everyone's code has its own additional features. For example, my code has true equation of states. Not every code has that, so we have to dumb down to the equation of states. Somebody has something different, so we all have to dumb down to kind of be closer to each other.
Dumb down or damp down?
Dumb. Yes, but the comparison started. I don't know yet the status yet, but we have the same initial model.
I was proposing to use systems that produce hot subdwarfs because then we know the initial state, but they didn't like that.
Because yes, because we cannot create the initial models for this.
So I had a question about your second to last slide on the light curves. So are the light curves from the three different models converging, and do they all show multiple peaks? I didn't see the end of your movie there. So
we don't have yet the end. We only modeled D39 score. We are like on the day 15 out of 20 days for the peak. The calculations go so long that I.
I mean, so the point of our paper was a very simplified model. It was just that if you have mass loss before the actual dynamical phase, there's going to be this entire circumstellar medium into which the dynamical ejecta will run, and you can get shock power emission, and that's what powers the second light curve. And Morgan McLeod also had a paper a few weeks ago on the archive of the student at Harvard, I think, and they were finding this effect was important in their calculations. That, you know, so I think that there's this recombination power, but then there's also possibly shock interaction with the pre-existing material from the L2 mass loss.
Okay, so thank you. And we now have a coffee break and we reconvene at 4 o'clock.